Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So this is the Media Project from Albany, New York, in the studios of Northeast Public Radio. Dr. Alan Shartok is here, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Professor, it's good to see you.
And always good to see you, Rex, and I'm not lying. I really like it when we see you around here.
Oh, it's very...
Because you're a very important and distinguished man in our community.
Yes, well... What's coming next, Ira?
I suspect that means there's a request for a story or a promotional item. You know, the fun drive is coming up. You might like a little ink on that.
Ira Fussfeld is here, the longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, and I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union here in Albany. I am not a registered journalist, I want to say.
That's a great point.
I'm an ordinary journalist, but down in South Carolina, I say, there's a bill that would require journalists to register. Yeah.
A bill that, of course, is not going anywhere. And, of course, it would be antithetical to the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. But it does show the kind of hatred that some legislators and politicians feel towards the press. But I'm more concerned with it because every once in a while I'm on a panel somewhere and I'll note something that appeared in the New York Post or something else. And somebody will say, oh, they're not real journalists. And I said, oh, well, who made you the judge of who was a real journalist? It's happened here on this very program, right, Rexy?
Imagine that.
Yeah, right. You're a professor. You're not a real journalist, even though you have a column and you're on the radio all day and you're this and that. That doesn't make you a real journalist. We're real journalists like Rex, who graduated first in his class from the Columbia School of Journalism.
Well, I think we could agree on one thing, that the definition of journalist...
That was a rant. That's what we could do. Yes.
That to the extent that there ever was a definition of journalist, it has been extended because of the various other venues to be a journalist that now exist that once didn't exist. But I think Rex and I would probably agree that if we were going to start writing the definition of journalist, we might put paragraph A and then paragraph B to specify between those who trained for years and years in school and an experience to be what are now known as traditional journalists versus the other kinds of journalists that are now existing in this world.
Well, wait a second now.
And before you criticize me, let me see if this characterizes it differently. Would you feel the same way about the word professor being tossed around? Because anybody could be a professor. You could walk, not literally, but you can walk into a classroom and teach.
The term is widely used, in fact.
Yeah, but you have a special skill through years of experience in schooling that makes you a
professor. And a doctorate and other things.
Okay,
so there we go.
Well, honorary doctorates are passed out pretty easily,
I have three of those, but I have a real one. Let me tell you now.
And doesn't it make you blanch a bit when you see others trying to horn in on a profession that you've long trained for it?
I love you. I truly do. I always have. But I have to say to you that this two wrongs make a right, you know, line of argumentation is hardly appropriate, you know, in something like this. But the one thing you have done here is to get me to stop my line of thinking, taking advantage of an old man who had something very good to say to you, and it'll come back to my head.
It'll happen sooner.
Well,
later.
As one who very early on this program, and I can remember I used to make fun of blogs and say, who finds these things? And we got all sorts of mail about that. And I understand now the world is different, and there are virtually anybody can be what could be called a journalist. But I do think there is a distinction based on training and experience, and that what makes me a chauvinist regarding journalism.
True, that's all true. But there has always been an effort on the part of people in government and in fact, in some of the self-serving journalists, to create things like councils. You remember the councils, Rex, that they were trying to set up?
Oh, the media councils. Sure, that would actually review the performance of the press and give people who were aggrieved, who thought that the press had behaved badly, give them a hearing, in effect.
Right.
There was a National News Council that was created in the early 70s that died when the New York Times and CBS News refused to participate. Minnesota had one, but that's because the people of Minnesota, as we who listen to Garrison Keillor know, are extraordinarily well-behaved, civic-minded.
And above average.
And of all above average, absolutely. But those were all voluntary, and that was all an effort just to, through the power of public attention, draw attention to places where the media may have behaved not as well, or where people thought that they were aggrieved. And in fact, generally speaking, the performance of the media was not inappropriate. The problem, I think, is not, and I don't think I was speaking in support of this South Carolina legislation, but the notion here is that a lot of people don't know the difference between journalism and propaganda, public relations, publicity, you know, all of which have their place. Advertising, especially now with the effort to mimic journalism in advertising. What's that called?
Advertorial.
That's what we have called it. There's now the new term for it. Native advertising, it's called, yes. Or native content, which basically means you make your advertising look so much like journalism traditionally is presented that people can hardly tell. And that's just
Yeah, that's particularly evident on websites now.
Yeah.
Every program, Rex, you raise this sort of self-serving, nauseating concept of what the obligation of a journalist is. So why don't you do it one more time to do no, what is it? Go ahead.
Seek the truth and report it fully.
Right.
As fully now, as possible is the first tenet of the Code of Ethics of the Society of Professional Journalists. Yes.
So it's the sort of Hippocratic oath of journalism, right?
Seek the truth and report it fully.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the other day I'm reading the New York POST. It's a word I won't say out loud if I can avoid it. And they have this huge article there about how Bernie Sanders is basically a Bolshevik.
Does he wear a hat like yours?
I never saw anything like this. He was part of YPSL. Now, you guys are young, so you don't really know what YPSL was, but it was the Young Socialist League that the lefties used to go to meetings in, and it was alleged to have ties to you know where. So this was a piece of garbage journalism. And I'm thinking, okay, there was Rex mouthing those platitudes about do no harm.
I didn't say do no harm, but I don't necessarily think that, you know, obviously you're perfectly and within your rights to say that those people are not adhering to the code of ethics. That happens all the time in that particular publication, you know, that you don't.
But can you think of another industry or profession that is more introspective than is ours?
Yes.
You can.
Sure.
How many industries have radio programs once a week here and elsewhere like this one, or have public editors who and ombudsmen who write columns often criticizing the work in their own paper, or who have councils as part of the American Society of Newspaper Editors or whatever the organization is to study and to judge and to try to advise what has been done right and what has been done wrong, and then publicizes it.
You know, when lawyers misbehave, it's covered up.
That's the key point, widely
covered up by the legal professions committees, the Bar Association committees that study this, and they may quietly sanction their people who have done wrong, but most offensive work by lawyers, you don't even see.
You know, Rexy and Ira, this would be one boring program without me.
Let's test that out.
And I'm going to tell you why. Because you guys would sit here with your arms around each other and agree that the press is better than everybody else, you know. But I'm here to bring the light of day into this
situation. I didn't say that, and I'm wondering if you didn't answer my question. Is there another profession that is as introspective in terms of looking at what it's done and pointing out the bad things than is ours?
What about the academic profession?
I don't know. Are they transparent as we are?
You guys get your tenure and you're just in like Flint. There's nothing you can do anything you like.
Not everybody gets tenure.
Yeah, well, of course not, because the people who are inside don't want to have anybody challenge them from the outside. You know, tenure, my goodness.
Okay, write that down and write to all your professors, write to Rex Smith.
I think what tenured professors have is the ability to be obstructionist when there is an effort to do any kind of changes in their academic life, or a university has to make a change in its program. Whoa, my goodness, we need to have professors study it for a couple of years and then decide, no, we'd really rather not because we're wise. But don't get me started. I'm sorry.
You know what, Rex? You're all right.
So if you have thoughts on this, sorry, professors, it's the Media Project. We are media at WAMC.org. That's how you write to us, media at WAMC.org. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith here. Cha-ching for CNN, folks. Let's hear it. The Republican National Committee has announced that it is ditching NBC for the next Republican presidential debate. That'll be coming up on February 25th. And that's because, of course, RNC did not like the debate that was run by CNBC. Even though CNBC doesn't really have the same news hierarchy as NBC, it does have the same corporate ownership. So the RNC is getting rid of NBC as the host, and they're having CNN do it. So do we care?
I tell you what, before this election cycle, these debates were not widely viewed and probably didn't make a lot of commercial time money for these networks. It was at that point in time, if not many years before, where the networks should have said to these parties, you want us to cover the debates. If we feel like covering debates, if we think it's newsworthy, we'll bring in some cameras and cover the debates. But we're not going to be partners with you. We're not going to be subject to your approval. I wonder, I don't know the answer to this, if the networks, when they are awarded, quote unquote, the debate, whether they have to pay a rights fee to the parties. If so, it makes it even more egregious that the networks are giving money to the parties. These debates should be run by the parties. I would suggest they should be run by the Presidential Debate Commission, which is considered to be fairly neutral and by all sides. But for just this reason, for a debate to have taken place and for then the party to say, no, we, Mr. Network, we didn't like the way you conducted the debate. We didn't like the questions you asked. So we're taking the next one away from you, and we're depriving you of all the commercial revenue that you're going to get. If I'm NBC, I say, thanks very much. Don't call us. We'll call you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you agree with that, Alan?
No.
You don't?
No, I never agree with much of what you
no,
guys
you
say.
Don't. That's your position.
But actually, you are right. But it all comes down to money. That's why when Rex said cha-ching before, he was right on the money. Look, Donald Trump doesn't get onto all those programs on his own terms. You know, nobody else is allowed to call in. Nobody.
Yeah, they started to allow, I've heard Hillary now a couple of times.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you have enough clout, you're allowed to have what the other guys aren't allowed to have. It's all about money. They know every time they put Donald Trump on a program or in a debate or something that people are going to say, hooray, I want to watch that. I want to look at it. And he calls the shots. Why? Because it's about money, advertising, and the way that they can make out like bandits. And I'll tell you right now, I think NBC will probably be somewhat hurt by this, although their integrity will be on the integrity meter will probably be raised.
Yes, and I would argue that sometimes that's more important than the money.
And let's bear in mind, by the way, speaking of the RNC taking a principled stand in their view against what they would consider biased journalism, the debate will still be partnered on Telemundo, the Spanish language network that is owned by NBC Universal. So it's not as though NBC is going to be totally punished by this. The RNC is especially interested in trying to reach out to Hispanic voters so that they don't lose all of them as they did in the last presidential race.
And which they probably will in this
race. Well, now that begs the question, does that mean that one of the questioners for Telemundo at that debate will be the journalist who Trump kicked out of his press conference?
And you
recall that Trump was suing Telemundo because they dropped some function on one of his events, Miss Universe or something.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to something you said before, Ira. I don't want you to get away scot-free with having said it.
Aha, he remembered what it was that he wanted to say.
No. This was relatively recent, which is the way it works. And Ira said that's the way it should be. In other words, that NBC, because, you know, your integrity has to come before your money. And I only had a cheap, quick riposte to that, which is, tell that to the president of NBC when his board meets and says, how come you have less money in this year than we expected you to have?
I understand the realities. I was a publisher. I understand that side of the business maybe more so than
well, you. Pete Seeger saying you're guilty of prostitution.
But on the other hand, these are legitimate news events. NBC is not asking permission, nor is NBC paying rights to cover the State of the Union, to cover the inauguration, or any any number of other events. Now, NBC is spending money, and I think a problem exists similarly to pay rights for sports events, for example. You need to pay the NFL billions of dollars to get the right to put your cameras. Now, in return, they're going to make back commercial revenue. It's almost the same thing, but I would suggest with the political debates, you have more public interest. This is journalism. This is news. NBC, yes, they're going to have to bite the bullet, but I think they will have some integrity as a result.
Well, not that it was their choice to have
integrity. Yes, you're right. They did. If given the choice, they would have paid the money and had no integrity. Well,
but look, you said the right word. There's the reality. I've always tried to teach my students, and I'll try to teach you guys, too, something about this, which is there's
Are you a re-professor?
There's difference. There's a difference between what is and what ought to be.
Yeah.
And that's what you're talking about.
By the way, we were talking about the Spanish language publication.
Sure.
It is interesting to note that Univision, the Spanish language broadcaster, has bought a 40% stake in The Onion, the satirical news outlet, which is no longer a print publication, by the way. The Onion is now digital only. But it's pretty cool, I think, that as these Spanish language broadcasters and publishers grow, as the Hispanic culture in the United States grows, they are reaching out into other areas.
Yes, Rex. But on the other hand, every time that Rupert Murdoch buys a press property, for example, as he bought the Wall Street Journal, the question arises, what's his motives? Will it affect the kind of journalism that the Wall Street Journal does? Now, I've been talking to a lot of people about that in my quest to always look at things journalistic. And almost everybody says there hasn't been a difference in the way the Wall Street Journal has covered the news, because everybody knew they were right-wing zealots when it came to the editorial page. Mm-hmm. But their front pages and their news items were supposed to be pretty good. And I keep hearing from people that that hasn't substantially changed. You guys agree with that?
Yeah, in fact, I would say that the Wall Street Journal is a better paper now than it was in the years. But that could be just a natural evolution of the paper to being more responsive journalistically, livelier. But certainly, there was a pretty quick change in which he made it much more of a competitor to the New York Times. He broadened the coverage, and I think he succeeded in making it more relevant. At the same time, the publication has become broader, more interesting, so I don't think that Rupert Murdoch's ownership of the Wall Street Journal has harmed it at all.
Yeah, I agree. I've often said, always have said, that Murdoch will go where his interests lie, and it would have not made much sense for him financially to do anything radically different with the Wall Street Journal.
Well, wait a second.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Just hold on there a second,
yes.
Ira.
You like Murdoch so much you're not going to defend him?
Just hold on there a second, Ira. He loses millions of dollars on the New York Post. Which
yes.
is
right,
which
but for
is,
a reason.
That's right. I'm telling you, because there is this competition between his political philosophy and making money.
But now, the Wall Street Journal was a successful publication.
That's correct.
He could have killed it by messing it
that's
up.
That's exactly why I asked you guys this question.
Right. Exactly.
But the New York Post is different from the Wall Street Journal, not only in the kind of newspaper it is, but that is a decidedly New York City newspaper, and it's very important for him to have that voice in New York City. The average person does not read the Wall Street Journal in New York City.
And he couldn't turn that into a money-making proposition no matter what he did, right?
Well,
the New York Post?
Well, look, this is reality. This is reality. And I'm not coming into this program if you guys are going to keep coughing the way that you do, because it's, you know, sort of like being in a ward in a hospital.
That's all right. David will take care of it in his producer technique. The great
I know.
Skill.
I'm not worried about David, and I'm not worried about the program. I'm worried about
your health. That's why you're wearing your furry
communist hat.
Absolutely. Yeah. This guy looks like he's just stepped off the plane from Vladivostok. Anyway, we need to talk about a very interesting element. When the news broke that the prisoners were being freed from Iran, including the Washington Post Tehran bureau chief, Jason Rezaian, here is something interesting. It was not news to some of the journalists at the Huffington Post, CNN, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal. That's because they had known about the negotiations. They had known that this was going to happen. They were going to be released, but they had basically withheld the information from their readers. Do we
Always
have
dangerous.
Any problem with this? Do we care about this? Let's call it a media blackout.
Well, I care.
What do you think?
Well, I mean, look, there are times in this complicated world where the media has to pull back. For example, do you want to put a complete plan of the hydrogen bomb on the front page of a newspaper? You probably don't. You know, even though the Ruskies have it and others have it, you know, you probably don't want to do that because somebody will certainly take advantage of it. On the other hand, Bay of Pigs is the classic example. The New York Times knew we were going to do the invasion, the Bay of Pigs invasion. They were asked by the president and others to hold back. They held back, and the invasion was a total flop. If it had been in the paper, maybe it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, and I think John Kennedy made that point. Actually, a more timely example was the Bush administration asking the New York Times to withhold a story on a warrantless wiretapping, which it did for a year, during which time George W. Bush was reelected. But there was some question as to the national security. Remember, this was not so long after 9/11. And right. I think that's kind of the case here. What would be the benefit to readers or the loss to readers? What harm would be caused to the audience if they published the information when they had it, as opposed to what harm would be caused by withholding it?
Now, that was a sociologically brilliant disquisition you just gave, because it had a main point in it, which I think, I can really relate to, although some of our more civil libertarian listeners will not, and that is, it depends on when it happens. Roosevelt got away with putting the Japanese into the internment camps because of World War II and because of the Japanese invasion in Pearl Harbor. I don't think a modern president could do it, although Donald Trump is saying, let's single out the Muslims now, and using, by the way, Roosevelt as an example.
Aha. And your point is that it's an inappropriate example because now is not then, right?
No, my point, I think it's your point, I'm complimenting you, really, is that you raise that it has to be historically sensitive at the moment you try to take a liberty away, where you say, please don't put this in the paper because it affects our national security around 9/11.
Well, I would also suggest the other reason, more frequent reason, and it's probably something that Rex has experienced. I know I did when I was active. Is that a police agency will ask to cover something up because of the near conclusion to an investigation, and that by publication prior to the conclusion, it either might screw up the investigation or, more importantly, it might put lives at risk. Mm-hmm. And I think the lives at risk is really a key factor in trying to convince a media executive to hold on to information, because obviously our inclination is to publish, not to hold back. The other thing I thought was interesting, there was apparently something of a smokescreen regarding the Raison case, because although these media outlets knew these negotiations were underway, about 2 or 3 weeks before the resolution of this case, there was a letter sent by a number of media organizations, including some of those who knew about this, to the president, or to Kerry, perhaps, to the Secretary of State, urging them to move forward on these negotiations so that these guys were, and specifically the journalists, was not forgotten. So I don't know if they did that as a smokescreen, but...
If I may just interject, there's also somewhat of a self-serving button here. Mm-hmm. That, in other words, there was this Washington Post reporter that everybody was trying to get back out of there. And the media was very upset about his being there. So can you imagine if the government comes to you and says, we're trying to get your guy out, but if you blow this by putting this out, then we're not going to be able to get him out. So it's a special case because we're the media and he's the media, and we're making that argument.
Well, it is. There is something to be said for that. It's certainly, but having a journalist imprisoned, an American journalist, makes the point of how many people are imprisoned inappropriately around the world and how many journalists are. The Committee to Protect Journalists says that at last count, there were 198 journalists in cells around the world. Most of them people who you've never heard of and people who never did anything wrong except try to tell the truth of what's going on in their country.
On the other hand, and I just say this even though I'm going to get killed for it, every presidential campaign is filled with what should we do in order to vanquish our enemies? And almost everybody says, put more assets on the ground. Are we absolutely sure? That means spies. Are we absolutely sure that there are some journalists who aren't spies?
Could be, but it certainly, again, would be contrary to the code of ethics.
Oh, yeah, well, that good old code of ethics.
Well, there you go.
You just keep on trotting it out.
All right. Well, that's it, folks, from your spies here in Albany, folks, the secret underground of public radio. Ira Fussfeld, Alan Shartok, and Rex Smith, we thank you for joining us on The Media Project.
We do indeed.
It's wonderful to represent the world. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policies and acts.
Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. full or part-time options. 518-454-5143.
Working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.